Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And it's that time of year again. We would sing the most wonderful time of the year, but people associate that with Christmas. No, the Heartland Film Festival is just around the corner. And joining me in studio, Greg Sorvig, Director of Film Programming, and Julia Ricci, the Film Programming Coordinator. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Thank you for making time, getting time away from the theater to get here.
Oh, definitely. It's been pretty wild. So, yeah.
You know,
I think it kicks into high gear when we know, hey, the festival's actually next week when we come on the show.
Yep.
So,
thanks.
Thanks
glad,
for the slap of reality.
Glad to, glad to provide that, of course.
Yeah.
So, I guess, how was this year getting ready for the festival? Because I know you guys get one day of sleep and then you're already jumping into
the following
year.
Yeah, this year was nuts because we rolled the dice, we gambled, and it paid off. Big time, where we our guidebook goes to print in late August, mm-hmm. and a little ditty called TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival,
which you often go to.
Yeah, we made an effort to go there the last couple of years because I mean, if the movies don't come to you, you go to the movies, and everything is at Toronto, all these huge premieres and stuff too. So if you get a copy of the big old guidebook, we had TBA to be announced for opening, closing, centerpiece, and we hit a grand slam. So. The best anecdote I can give you this year is from another film programmer who's coming this year, but she said coming to Heartland this year is like trick-or-treating in the good neighborhood. So you can only full-size candy bars here.
Uh-huh.
No rolls of pennies, no floss, no...
No raisins.
No hard candies with no wrappings. You know, this is only the primo candy at this year's Heartland.
Wow.
Yes, I mean, we have... The biggest year we expanded to our Shorts Festival. It'll be 3 years now coming up. So it's all feature films primarily. So we went from about 120 last year to over 200. So just by that virtue, there's so much more from our side that we have to program and get tightened up. But the thing we've done too, such an unknown commodity for independent film, like let's do some other kind of sidebars and funnels that people can get into. So the biggest thing too... For opening night, we landed from TriStar Pictures and Sony, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, starring Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think me being a Fred head, like Fred's one of my heroes, when they announced the film was coming out over a year ago, I was like, Dad, I mean, and then I hope the timing worked out. And then they announced fourth quarter 2019, like, oh yeah. So that, let's say it wasn't an easy turnkey.
Did you have the picture of Tom as Mr. Rogers at the top, like the FBI do with the case.
Yeah,
like
most wanted.
It all goes up. It all leads to this.
I did one of those kindergarten-esque paper chains too. So
of course,
I had over hundreds of paper chains and rip off day by day.
And hoping. I think after the first photo was published, it reminded me of, and this was a long time. I was in college. Was when. They released the first photo of Denzel Washington as Malcolm X, and everybody got really excited. They're like, "Oh, this is going to work. This is going to happen."
Yeah, and it's interesting because you saw the photos, you get excited, but at the same time, if you idolize somebody, I mean, there's two different things. It could be verite; you can watch them eat cereal for 2 hours and be excited.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if they don't get it right, there's a lot of scrutiny behind that too. So I think going into the film, Mario Heller, who did "Can You Ever Forgive Me" last year with Melissa McCarthy, brilliant movie. There's just like that film, a character who is kind of trapped in their own cage, if you will, mental cage, just can't get over some baggage they have. That's kind of like the main character, the cynical Lloyd Vogel, the Esquire columnist in this film. So it's not all focused on, you know, Mr. Rogers doing stuff. He's more of a supporting type
Tuesdays
role.
With Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, but it's but every time he's in, it's magical.
Well,
it really is.
My first concern was because there was a great documentary that came out a couple years ago and thought, well, is this going to be like the follow-up when Robert Zemeckis did a feature film basically after Man on Wire?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think I overheard somebody say this at TIFF too. It's like, you know what, that captured kind of his ideals and what made him tick.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and really what he did with children, more so with the show. And it did kind of go into some other stuff too, and it was a really great documentary for Morgan Neville. But what this does, I think it shows the relationship that he had beyond that with adults as well, and everyone he interacted with.
Okay.
And it shows that he worked towards it. It wasn't just like this, he's this saintly, untouchable.
Right.
Godly person. He's a human being too, but he, yeah.
Yeah, no matter what Fox News says.
exactly.
Sorry, there's a section of that film. Anyway, yes. Well, cool. That's,
yeah.
So
that's just opening.
I know, but I'm like, are you rubbing elbows at cocktail parties at TIFF too? Because
I
feel weird saying TIFF because I don't go to TIFF. You go to TIFF.
Yeah, the Toronto International Film Festival. Yeah, because really, it's Venice, and don't get to go to Venice much. But Toronto and Telluride the week prior to really like the Oscar season kickoff. But yeah, it's great. I think there's a lot of films we're chasing. Sometimes I'm fortunate enough to get screeners of things beforehand. If not, hey, let's see it there. But I think it really does. If you're in the room, you're there talking with people. I saw the movie. I loved it. As opposed to just being one of probably hundreds of programmers who were just sending an email with their fingers crossed. It really did pay off, and that's been a lot of my success, making great relationships.
Do you have a list in your desk buried somewhere of the ones that didn't make it?
That didn't make it?
And can I see it someday? Not today.
No, but I will tell you, I mean, and Julian knows this for sure, too. Not everything was a turnkey yes right away. Like, we fought hard, and the lineup proves that But that's the beauty of this year. I mean, it's an amazing lineup, and we're just glad everything worked out.
So, from your point of view, you're at the office, and he comes running in his Canadian garb and and souvenirs galore. What happens next?
Yeah, just the excitement. I just kept getting really excited texts during, I was holding down the fort with everything else here.
Kinda,
yeah, text. But tell him the text message I got when we got. Opening night film and closing night film. It's just kind of like, I don't know. And it was the day before we did our announcement party.
That's cool. Yeah. And I announced that too. I mean, I think we announced this at our announcement party. So yeah, Toronto took place the same week. Mm-hmm. Toronto is still happening when we have our big announcement party a month prior to the fest.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say a lot of things fell into place.
A lot of double checking, triple checking.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we saw Waves from A24, which is a great movie, and we got that confirmed for our lineup just hours before that. So we were able to pull the trailer and announce it at the announcement party and go from there too. But honestly, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of studios don't know what they're doing with the film until after Toronto. Mm-hmm. So it took some great, relationships I developed to kind of nudge during Toronto to get the answers we needed in time and stuff too.
Not necessarily, okay, I guess this is not a particularly a direct Heartland question, but can you give an example, Greg, of something that went one way or went another after Toronto? Especially if you were there to see it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's almost serendipitous how the films that we landed and confirmed were like 5 of the 15 top movies out of Variety from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple titles. There's one that I thought was going to be an easy, Indianapolis connection, maybe with racing involved. That didn't quite work out.
Okay, all right. Those guys showed up, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was interesting, too. But you never know. I mean, the door's never closed. I mean, that's the thing. We invite films. Mm-hmm. People, have different things, too. And even with big films that we landed, when they announce other festivals, we're like, hey, is this going to work out with timing? Because I know it's going to be at this huge fest at this time, too. So you kind of have to play against that. So there are a lot of moving parts. So it's not a, hey, raise your nose, you're dead to me situation. It's, hey, we realize.
And you also have the whole rest of the year to plan things like that, especially if something is going to be at a release at a much later date.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's kind of our biggest success, I think, this year. It's getting those big titles that are going to be Oscar contenders, then also doing other kind of sideboard programs to get people in who might not know, and then really still have the unknown, true indie hidden gems that no one's going to have any idea. Take a flyer on, too. But this year, I mean, it has been different. Our tagline is a bold cinematic space, and this is probably the biggest, boldest lineup we've had. If you think Heartland is old, Pollyannic, Hallmark stuff, yeah. come here and get your face blown off this year, is it? What I challenge you to.
Right.
And with that, too, I think on one of our programs that we announced, we're moving forward with Heartland Horror. So we will be jumping.
That's a two-syllable word.
Horror.
Folks. Horror. Yep. Yeah. Well, there's an easy joke there. We're not going to do it. So give us some horror examples.
So what we're doing, we're working with Evan Dossi and Sam Weidermeyer as well.
Oh, those
too.
Guys.
Those gents.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of a concept we've always kind of talked about, and there's such a great group of horror fans around indie and stuff too, that you know we're not. What we're going to do, we have call for entries that opens up in November for next year. So before we do that, we formally say, hey, we're going to put cash prizes behind this category and for shorts and features. Let's partner. So we're going to show the A24 release in Fabric. And we're going to announce this. We're going to tell people, hey, like, we do have a spot for you here. Keep your eyes peeled. This is going to be something else, to release all the details. So it's kind of our kickoff event this year. And then we'll definitely have more programming next year in 2020.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I went through the program and I'm hitting bullet points, so
yeah.
Either one. But I guess let's start with what is going to be an example of the film education program.
Well, you have specifically the film education program, the guidebook. We've partnered. We've gotten some great grants. So that's more kind of a year-round type event, so people can pick a handful of different things and stuff too. Mm-hmm. But we do have some programs working with the Indiana School for the Blind, and we're getting some open captioning and stuff done on a few films. We're going to work with some of their students on the educational stuff. We work with Park Tutor School as well, too. So, yeah, we have a lot of different content. We're going to work with schools specifically. Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of different school groups coming in to see certain films, and we're doing showing the high school shorts from Indie Shorts. We usually do that every year for high school students that come in. So
okay,
yeah.
Now, when you guys sit down as a unit to discuss honorees, how long is that process? And besides the fact that, okay, I'll say it, but they'll show. What else is taken into consideration? How is that broken down? Is it Paris 1968?
I think a lot of times it's sometimes we look at films that we already like or already have kind of on the radar and go from there, as opposed to, hey, let's just slot this in and kind of hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of it is availability and stuff too. And I think this year we're going to be honoring Michael Apted and Cloris Leachman. And so I think have a great contact, and they said, hey, would you take a look at this 63 Up? And then it just premiered at Telluride, and it's a great movie. So from the 7 Up series, so
have you done all those?
We have not. So this is
personally.
I'm sorry.
The series.
Have I seen them all?
Yeah.
I have not seen them all. So candidly,
me
I mean, I'd be glad. Yeah.
I remember seeing, I forget which one, but in school, I watched one of the earlier installments.
Really?
Yeah, and it's just amazing.
Where'd you go to school?
Cool. Memphis, Tennessee. It was, back in.
If you don't know Michael Apted, who's done everything from Coal Miner's Daughter to a Bond film, but he interviews started with a series of 7-year-olds, and every 7 years returns and talks to them, and it's fascinating stuff. And what a, you know, we praise Richard Linklater for his commitment of stuff like Boyhood. I'm like, Apted's been doing it quite a while.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Even stuff like recently, like Ray Donovan on Showtime. He was head of the DGA, the Directors Guild, for years too. I mean, his career is really unprecedented too. So I think that's just, hey, we wanted the film,
mm-hmm.
but that's when I personally offered, like, hey, we would love, is he available? Love to honor him with the Lifetime Achievement Award. So that was a fantastic opportunity. So we're excited. So October 12th at Castleton, we'll show 63 Up, and then he'll get the Lifetime Achievement Award. And we'll have a party afterwards, too. So that'll be a lot of fun. Party with Michael Apted.
And he was at Heartland several years ago with the premiere of Amazing Grace, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Years and years ago. So a little different film.
Slightly different. And what will you guys be doing with Ms. Leachman?
So, Clore, she's 93, and she's unable to travel, but she's done a nice video piece for us in our...
And surround her with young guys.
Yeah. I would say one of the Heartland go-tos, Corbin Burnson's back with... He's in this film as well, too, with Melissa Gilbert from Little House on the Prairie. And she's in this film, too, so I think we are going to give her a Lifetime Achievement Award. She's done a great video and honor her there, too. But, I mean, for her career as well. Yeah. I mean, you look at both her and Apted, I mean, just the variety of roles... it's pretty outstanding.
Yeah. And I know also you're doing a retrospective on Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, that's really neat too. So I'll let Julie, I'll pass the torch to her on this too. But she alone curated her anniversary lineup this year, which we've never done. And there's two great Hoosier ties.
So with the Mummy and Brendan Fraser, it was born in Indianapolis, which is a really awesome connection. And so we're doing a 20th anniversary screening of the Mummy at Newfields in the Toby Theater. And that will be that's going to be a blast. I'm really excited about that. And he'll be here in conversation with Pete Hammond from Deadline after the film. So there's that. And then we're also doing two retrospectives tied in with him as well. Some of his earlier films, The Quiet American. And Gods and Monsters. So those will be that's the Brendan Fraser retrospective. And then we also are doing a 40th anniversary of Breaking Away. Classic, Little 500, entirely filmed in Bloomington. And Dennis Christopher, the lead in that, is going to be here as well.
Very cool. My lovely wife was a student down there when the film was being made.
Yeah.
Neat.
Excellent.
And the neat thing, too, is that I think those retrospective Fraser films, he handpicked those.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, and I think those are deeper cuts of just say, hey, name me. I think that's neat, too. We're not just, hey, here's George of the Jungle.
Yeah. Right. We know his CGI aughts material. Yeah. And so the fact that, and both of the Gods and Monsters and Quiet America, really, really, two of his best performances.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
And the fact that you get another chance to see these in a theater. I still think not enough people have seen both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still heralded worldwide. So, and I forgot about the Indianapolis connection. It'll be fun to hear the stories on that. So, those are now happening as well. So that's very, very cool.
And then speaking of deeper cuts,
yes.
I think Julie can go through some of the other.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going back a little bit. I'm a huge classic movie fan. I grew up watching all these old movies, probably more than newer movies, because I was terrified of the Disney movies that were coming out in the 90s because the villains were just scary. So my parents were like,
growing up with Disney in the 70s.
Yeah. So they were like, what else can she watch? So they started showing me, classic musicals like Singing in the Rain, Sound of Music, all that. And that's kind of where it started. And so I grew up on Turner Classic Movies and have been involved with freelance work through them and go to their film festival in LA every year. And actually introduced a film on TCM several years ago.
Oh, which one? What did you do?
I did National Velvet. They gave me a list of 10 films, and that was the list of 10 films I submitted to them, and that's the one they picked. So, and it's a childhood favorite.
What were the other 9?
Oh, I think The Apartment, Music Man,
International Velvet. No, I'm kidding.
So there's that.
Nice.
So I wanted to select. I'm a big proponent of showing classic films on the big screen because that's the way they were meant to be seen. You're not meant to watch Lawrence of Arabia on your iPhone. I actually know somebody who has done that. I cannot believe it.
I scalded my daughter when she was about 11 or 12, and then of course she said, "Who's David Lean?" I said, "Don't sass. Yeah. Just heed my words."
Yeah. So,
wait. Is it somebody you work with or somebody you just know?
Oh, somebody I just know. Yeah.
I'm not going to ask.
Yeah. Right. It's Greg. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I know Greg.
I only watch films on tiny screens.
Yes.
I'm just imagining. Well, you got to have the thing on the back. You can't hold that phone for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So
I wanted to program a mix of some like classic favorites that people know and want to share with their family or whatever, but also some deeper cuts of movies that they might have seen. Even though it's an old film, it's still new to you if you haven't seen it.
Exactly.
So one of those films is called The Setup. It was directed by Robert Wise.
Ryan. Indiana's own Robert Wise.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Locker room drama.
Yeah. Boxing. It's Martin Scorsese's one of his favorite films. films, and that inspired Raging Bull. So if you're a Raging Bull fan, the cinematography is fantastic. But yeah, Robert Wise is a Hoosier. He's probably best known for Sound of Music and West Side Story, but he started out as an editor. He edited Citizen Kane, and then he made some noirs and westerns and all kinds of genres. And so there's that film, and it's shot in real time, so it's only 73 minutes. It's basically an hour and 10 minutes of this guy's life.
Are you guys showing a print or is it a disc?
It is a new restoration.
It looks. Yeah. I mean, I have it on DVD, and it was one of those. It's kind of like there was. It was like whenever you saw Warner Brothers old titles, especially the crime stuff for me, and the noir stuff from 20th Century Fox, you just grabbed it, regardless if you knew it or not. And I did that with the setup, and absolutely was thrilled, thrilled to death watching that. That's very, very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, we're doing that. And
what day is that?
Ooh, it is. Oh, I want to say the 14th or the 15th. I can't remember.
You can go. You can go to
the handy dandy.
Oh, well, trust me.
We've
scrolled. We've typed. We've scrolled. We've even paused the show so we could verify this. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah, and then another one of the, I guess, deeper cuts is a film called Bachelor Mother. It's a 80th anniversary, 1939 rom-com starring Ginger Rogers and David Niven. It's one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah.
It's her first film after, leaving her pairing with Fred Astaire. Like, she made films before Fred Astaire and then films after Fred Astaire, and this is her, she really gets the chance to shine. She's a fabulous actress. A lot of people just know her for her dancing, but she's a really great actress, and it's just a really cute romantic comedy, kind of deals with single motherhood in a way that you wouldn't expect for 1939.
Right.
But yeah, it's set around Christmas and New Year's, and it's just really, really cute. Yeah.
Now, is it lumped as a Christmas movie because of the setting there?
It's not known. I think it's
or
just
not known enough.
I wouldn't. I watch it different times of the year, but I think it's not as known as, it's not It's a Wonderful Life or, A Miracle on 34th Street, focus on Christmas, but it is set at Christmas and New Year's. But it opens on Christmas, and then by the end of it, New Year's has happened.
We're not having these diehard level barroom talks then?
Yeah, no, yeah.
One of my goals, I've directed a radio version of It's a Wonderful Life a few times, and one of my goals, if I ever, is to direct It's a Wonderful Life in a non-November-December month. Because it's a life-affirming show, story. It's not a Christmas story. Or it's not a Christmas story.
Are you announcing today that you're going to direct the new movie version of It's Wonderful? That's been rumored.
You're going to finance this? Dude, I'm still working on stage, yet alone screen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so we have the date. So the setup is October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Newfields. Mm-hmm. And then Bachelor Mother is on Monday, October 14th at 5 p.m. at Newfields. So.
Very cool.
And actually, Bachelor Mother is a free screening for our Heartland members. So if you're a Heartland member, your ticket is free for Bachelor Mother. So
look at that. Yeah. And for website information, people can go to?
HeartlandFilmFestival.org.
Okay. Now, I saw another familiar face in Indianapolis circles, Patti Spittler.
Mm-hmm.
And she has her picks. And they're dog related.
Oh yeah,
of course they are. How did it come about?
No, Patty's been a good friend of Heartland now for years and stuff too. And I think we're doing another special on Great Day TV that's going to be on today. If the people are listening Saturday,
it's technology.
Yeah. So so we know that she's with Pet Pals TV as well. So she's kind of identified some great films too. Mm-hmm. So Well Groomed is a movie that was out South by Southwest. The director has had films at Heartland before and stuff too. And it's about the competitive world of dog grooming, dog showing. So these,
but not written and directed by Christopher
Guest.
Essentially,
if a dog and a snow cone merged, that's what these look like. And there's one that's like 80s themed, and it's like Alf and a Smurf and E.T. on the side. It's crazy, but HBO Sports picked it up. Yeah. So it was pretty crazy.
The Ocho?
The Ocho, yeah. So that's pretty neat, too. And then I think there's been the third film in the Red Dog trilogy, if you will. So Red Dog was one of the biggest successes of Heartland ever back in, 2011. Mm-hmm. Won the grand prize. I think it was the highest grossing film in Australia at one point, even surpassing Titanic and Avatar and stuff, which was nuts.
Wow.
And then the sequel of Red Dog True Blue, Jason Isaacs was in that. That won a grand prize again years ago. Mm-hmm. And then now, this is a little bit different. Different directors and stuff too, but it's almost like a mockumentary. that shows the relationship of the real dog and how it affected the life of the director and the producer. And Nelson Voss, who is here with the other films, he's coming back. So he's kind of featured in the film as this quasi, you know, as a dramatized version of himself with the dog. So it's a great kind of love letter to, I'd say, dogs and anyone who have been affected. Yeah, so that'll be world premiering with us, which is pretty special and cool, too. So those are two of Patty's picks.
All right. Well, Abdul and I are ready for our 70s blaxploitation retrospect, so we'll wait your call. All right. Let's move into the award categories.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to do more than just ask you to read a list off the program.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So our awards we've given this year will be over $3.5 million since 92, so the biggest prize purse of a festival period in North America, which
thank
is
you,
pretty
corporate
cool.
sponsors.
Yeah, thank you. Great endowments and stuff, too.
Yes.
But the neat thing with that is that it does actually make a difference. And we know, you know, independent film, you're lucky if you ever make money back or pay off the debts to make it.
Right.
But a lot of these filmmakers, two folks back in 2012 and I think 15, ended up using their money to finance their next films. Both premiered at Cannes, which was pretty wild. And then last year, documentary about Nadia Murad, who's the co-recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, survivor of being an ISIS sex slave, won $25,000 and donated every penny back to her nonprofit, which was pretty cool. So that's neat, too. So this year, the crop of films, no pressure, these films, once you win the money. So we have finalists, which are our competition titles, so five documentaries and five narratives. And what we try to do, we try to say these are wildly different films, different genres, different feels, but they're all worthy of getting the cash. So those films are going to be vying for $15,000 cash prize each. And then we have other award categories, best U.S. and world premieres. We're excited to have a lot of great movies that are premiering with us, especially one called System Crasher, which is the official German entry for the Academy Awards in the Best International Feature Film category. So this film hits the trifecta for us. We have a Cultural Journey Germany program featuring the cinema, cuisine, culture of Germany. That's one of the eight films in that program. It's a U.S. premiere, and it's also in the Best International Feature Film Oscar Contenders program. So thank you to that film for hitting all of the checkboxes this year. So that's pretty neat. So Best U.S. and World Premieres, our friend Richard D. Probst, we usually use the D in this instance, Richard D. Probst for the full name.
Oh, so he can be distinguished.
He's very fancy.
Yeah.
But we have the Social Impact Awards that we named in his honor last year. So this is the second year, narrative in a doc with cash prizes as well.
Do you know what it's like to hang out with him now, knowing that he's got something of that high regard prestige on him? By the way, there's a film called Barefoot. It is not the Richard Probst story. It's the Mark Ballmer story. So, sorry, Richard.
Great premiere and good plug.
I'm sure the filmmakers loved me plugging their film that way in this context. Sorry,
well,
gang.
The perfect film for Richard was Stumped that we had.
Oh, jeez, you've been on this show a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
He loved that, too. And then the neat thing, we're the only festival sanctioned by the Stewart family to have an award to honor Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
Because both on and off screen, like, you know, he embodied the underdog character who kind of did the right thing with a humble humanity. And he was really like that off screen, too. He fought in World War II as a fighter pilot when other people were just waving around bonds and doing their tour and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's really neat. So we have a $5,000 cash prize and a film that embodies his legacy. We're partnered with the International Film Critics Association for Prezi, so they give an award for best U.S. directorial debut. So international group coming in to pick the best American directorial debut film, which is pretty cool, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of – we have a few more prizes, too, but we're going to do all of that, our a new kind of reimagined awards brunch. We used to have an awards party and a filmmakers brunch. We creatively renamed it Awards Brunch.
Well, there's more mimosas involved that time around.
The holy trinity of filmmakers, bacon, and cash. That's what I like to tell people.
Is it that you're going to make that the symbol, then. Yeah. The tagline.
And that will be at the Montage, which is kind of near Castleton in the 82nd Street area, on Saturday, October 19th at 11. So it's a lot of fun.
Good. And it's funny, you mentioned Germany. How was Germany selected for the cultural journey?
Yeah, so we've had cultural journey for a few years, and the first year was India. Then we did Mexico, and it was a standalone event. We thought, hey, let's add the excitement into the main festival. So we did that. We talked to different counselors from different countries and stuff, too, and I think just the folks that we talked to last year, we passed the torch every year, so we'll do the same thing. We'll pass the torch this year to the next country.
Mm-hmm.
So we just kind of talk about different countries that might be engaged and excited about it, that might have a great base here in Indianapolis and beyond and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're ultimately selected. And they have some great cinema coming out and stuff too. So we were at the Berlin Film Festival earlier this year looking at potential titles where System Crasher actually did premiere there too, with a handful of other films that we plucked for the lineup.
So going back a little bit, when you both go to festivals, how has it been? I mean, obviously Heartland's getting more recognition, and I mean this in the best way possible. It is a part of the year, as opposed, because some of us have been here long enough that we remember when it was starting out and it was still growing, and you got a grown festival.
Yeah, and that's what's different this year. I think even from local film critics to other people in the industry, I mean, we have people coming from the Hollywood Foreign Press. We have other like huge folks from like LA Film Critics Association and stuff too. That are coming and paying attention. I think part of that is, hey, you got the big titles, you got the big buzz, but also word of mouth. I think we've added all the ingredients, and this year I think it really just clicked. So ticket sales are like crazy high in terms of percentage from last year. So not just anecdotally, but the stats are back up. Hey, this is something crazy and special and different this year. So, as I said in the past years, if you don't go, you don't know.
Right.
So, I mean, for something that's been around so long, it's cool to say, hey, no, if you went 20 years ago, come back. It's totally different.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it's cool to feel like we're on the circuit. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that is from going to the film festivals. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wow, they're there. But if you're not in the room having those conversations, then it's tough. So
exactly.
I think we've definitely made those relationships.
Mm-hmm. What are this year's panel discussions?
Sure. Yeah, so we have three panels this year. One of them we're really excited about. We're all excited about all of them, but one in particular, Time Magazine is launching their feature-length documentary unit. They haven't made a feature-length documentary until now. And so it's called Paradise Without People. It deals with two Syrian refugee mothers in Greece and how they're navigating that. And they it was a Pulitzer Prize winning cover story a couple years ago. And so they turned that into a documentary and did some digital media stuff with that. And so it's a feature-length documentary, and the director and producer of that film will be coming to do a panel to talk about that process, turning that from a cover story to a feature-length documentary. And that will be after a screening of the film. That'll be Saturday, October 12th. Film will play earlier in the afternoon, I believe at 1 o'clock, and then 3 o'clock there's the panel discussion. It'll be an hour long, and the panel is free to come to as well. So,
you hear that?
Yeah. So that should be really, really interesting to talk about that. We also have a panel with the filmmakers of Whelm, which is one of our Indiana Spotlight selections this year. It's also a world premiere film, and it's a film set during the Depression, kind of deals with outlaws, gangsters, that kind of thing. And they shot it here in Indiana, and they also shot it on 16mm film.
Ooh.
And we're going to be the world premiere screening at the Toby Theater in Newfields. We're going to screen it on 35mm film.
Oh, and so, that's going to look cool.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeously shot film. It will be great on the big screen. And they'll be doing a panel as well to talk about that process shooting on film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how many films are represented from Indiana this year?
We have seven. So and they'll also be up for the Indiana Spotlight Grand Prize as well. So there's some cash involved.
All right. As well. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing? As far as pacing yourselves?
We're excited. I mean, yeah. I think, like you alluded to, it's like every year is like if we landed one big fish Oscar contender, like, hey, we feel like we made it.
Right.
This year's like I said, that embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
We're giving away those full-size candy bars left and right, going wild. So, yeah. But, I mean, just ramble through some of the really big names. I mean, so, like we said, closing night is Just Mercy from Warner Brothers. So Michael B. Jordan, Oscar winner, Jamie Foxx, Brie Larson, about the true story of Bryan Stevenson forming the Equal Justice Initiative years ago. Another great movie that I had my eye on. So, honestly, two films about my heroes – two Oscar-contending films from huge distributors, fantastic movies. So that's honestly kind of like my dream opening and closing. So that really worked out well, too. And then first year we've worked with Netflix, so we're going to be showing Marriage Stories, our centerpiece film.
Okay.
With Adam Driver, another Hoosier guy.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson, Laura Dern, who, keep your eyes peeled on her for Best Supporting Actress. When I saw the film at Toronto, there was like a huge round of applause after a scene. She plays this really quick, quick-witted divorce attorney, a very very California divorce attorney, and she's just hilarious as well.
It's a Noah Baumbach film,
right? It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
And it's good. So I think this is the buzz around this film, and I can confirm, too, that it's probably his best sights on some award stuff. He's been very close, but I think this mm-hmm. might be the year that stuff moves forward. And then also another contender that they have is The Two Popes. Jonathan Pryce probably, honestly, I mean, he's been in so much stuff, but this is probably career best or very close.
Man.
He will probably get a nomination, if I wouldn't be surprised. Mm. And then Anthony Hopkins plays Pope Benedict. So it's during that transition between the two. Pope Francis was, I think, the biggest critic of the more conservative Pope Benedict and stuff, too. So that kind of goes in that relationship. And usually now you're like, hey, here's a Catholic movie. I mean, it's not just a Catholic movie, but it's like, hey, let's not touch that. Yeah. But saw it, and I was just really floored by it. Like, it was yeah. really neat. And even some of the intricacies and some of the style, it's like every time the director, like, points the camera to Anthony Hopkins, you know something's not quite right, and it's just kind of a askew angle and very handheld and stuff too. So there's some decisions that were made in that film that I thought suited it very well.
Pope Lear.
Yeah, exactly. But then, yeah, other stuff too, like Waves from A24 is a powerhouse. If you've not seen the trailer, it's probably one of the most effective emotional mm-hmm. trailers of the year. Yeah. It's just a slam dunk. And the film, it'll rip your heart out and give it back to you by the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Not in a sentimental way, but like a holy crap, this is, I mean, it takes you on a journey.
Kind of way, yeah.
It's almost like two halves of it's crazy, but you have to see it to believe it too. Jojo Rabbit we just added, which is crazy too. And I'll tell you what, everyone expected that to be like, oh, this is the hot button movie. Well, hold my beer, says Joker. You know, that's yeah. kind of like, yeah. that's become kind of like the cat's meow.
Well, first, tell because that was your, I believe that was the last TBA you guys had as far as the lineup. Was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we were just able to land that, announced it yesterday. So yeah, I got to see it at Toronto too.
How is it? What did you think?
No, I liked it a lot. So I think the way that it's really promoted in the trailers is it's a satirical, you know, kind of comedy about a boy, a Hitler youth, whose best friend is an imaginary Hitler, played by Taika Waititi, with blue contacts in and the hairdo and stuff too.
It's Drop Dead Fred meets the producers.
exactly, yeah. Yeah, with a little gray dick kidder pushed in there too.
So we're already at imaginary friend Hitler.
Yeah.
So there's your dividing line as far as who's going to go and who's not going to go.
But it is. I mean, and that's what, and you might have heard too, like, you know, when Disney bought Fox and everything too, and they're kind of like, oh, what are we going to do with this potentially?
Right.
So you see, like, on the posters, like, it's an anti-hate story and stuff too. But really, it does get, it's full of humanity, and it does go into kind of a different storyline than you expect towards the end as well. So I think I love it when a film's trailer really only focuses maybe on stuff in the first act, so it doesn't give away the entire
yeah,
movie.
That's,
it's
yes.
not a rom-com
yeah.
trailer. Like, oh, right. I just enjoy the whole movie, but I'm still going to go.
Right.
So that's what it does. So I think really the fun, satirical, slapstick stuff is towards the beginning. There's still a lot of hilarious off-the-wall stuff throughout the film. But yeah, it kind of goes in there too. And the young actress who's in Leave No Trace plays opposite of the young boy in the film. She does a great job too.
Mm-hmm.
But Sam Rockwell is in the film, Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant. So I mean, it has a great cast, and it's great. So it's not as polarizing as people are saying now. I mean, turn on CNN, Fox News.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
polarizing. You got.
Oh,
you got
it's okay.
That.
There's good people on both sides.
There are for sure. Yes.
No, so you didn't want to. Make this year's headline from Mr. Rogers, the Adolf Hitler.
Yeah. No, but that's the thing, too. And I think that, I don't know, I don't say that, I don't dare I say, like, you know, there's never that we've ever had the situation where, like, we couldn't program a certain film. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like we have that period anymore. I think there was a sense of what Heartland used to be, and I don't mm-hmm. think that's even there.
So this is like leaping over the boy in the striped pajamas.
I think this program, it feels like, you know, this, mm-hmm. look at everything here. This is, you know, we've always hoped for movies in the past, and I think we definitely have access to the full buffet, if you will.
Right.
So I think,
right.
So we are bringing to you everything and then some too. And even mm-hmm. I would say, like, we have a special presentation of Synonyms, which was the big winner in Berlin, and that is a deeper cut for like traditional Heartland goers, I would say, and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it's a fantastic journey. And it deals with, I think, identity and even, to a sense, your national identity of where you're from and what do you try to be in a different situation, in a different country and stuff, too. So I think that's a great thing, and I think that's something you wouldn't have seen the Heartland in years and years ago.
We also have another international Oscar possibility going on.
Yeah, so this year, we've done this for a couple years now. We're showing the best international feature Oscar contenders. They changed the category name to that. This year used to be called Foreign Language, Best Foreign Language Film. So this year we have 20 of them from all different countries around the world. So it's basically this specific country's official entry that they're handing over to the Academy to be considered for this award at the Oscars. So we have 20 of them. A lot of the top contenders this year. I think the deadline for them to submit their film to the Oscars was this week. So, and a lot of the top ones we have Parasite, which from South Korea, directed by Bong Joon-ho. It was the Palme d'Or winner at Cannes this year. I think that's a clear front runner, and I haven't seen it, but I know Greg has seen it, but I know from a lot of commentary on it, people who have seen it, it's a film that the less you know about it going in, the better off you are.
Okay,
when you're watching it. So I've heard it's a wild ride, so there's that. And then
I would parallel it with structure and other stuff to even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Okay. I haven't heard that a lot, but I would.
Wow.
I wouldn't.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And you'll see what I mean.
Got it.
And then there's also Pain and Glory, which is Spain's entry to the Oscars, and it competed for the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and I actually got to see the premiere of it at Cannes, and that was a film that I was like, when I saw it, I was like, this has to play at Heartland, whether we get it for this program or not. It's Antonio Banderas, and it's an autobiographical narrative about Pedro Almodovar, the director, so it's kind of his life story kind of unfolding.
His Marcello Mastroianni.
Yeah, it's kind of in that vein a little bit. It was surprisingly what's the word for it? It was very tender. Surprisingly, I kind of went in not knowing what to expect with that one, but really great performance by Antonio Banderas. He will definitely be up for Best Actor this year.
Hey.
It's
heard it here first.
Yeah. So there's that, and then we have others as well from countries like Morocco, Tunisia, Denmark, Georgia. We have Shindizi, the Georgian film. It's the U.S. premiere of that. Mm-hmm. We have Honeyland from Macedonia. It's also part of our award season spotlight. About beekeeping in Macedonia, and that's another one of the top contenders. It's also on Doc NYC's shortlist for the Academy Awards as well. They usually identify they're really good at predicting what's going to be nominated for Best Documentary. So there's that as well, plus many others. So in these films, this will definitely be the first chance to see them here in Indiana, and possibly the only chance. A lot of these international features don't get a lot of play
right
here, if week two tops. And so
that's always been, I think, from the get-go, one of the benefits of the festival is getting to see stuff before it gets released, or this might be it. Yeah. So it's we're getting into grown-up movie season, and we're getting into award contenders. So part of it is getting an early jump on that, but also this is the time where you can take a chance and just walk into something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something too. So Honeyland's also part of our award season spotlight program. So 10 documentaries, I felt, hey, these have huge implications possibly to get nominated for Academy Awards stuff too. And there's always great documentaries early in the year, and we usually don't bring those back it's October, so this is a great opportunity to do that. And Honeyland is one of those films too. So we think five of those films, including The Cave, which won the Toronto People's Choice Award. So if you don't know that, there's usually has only been one award at Toronto, and it was the People's Choice Award, and that usually either goes on to get nominated, and if not, most of the time actually win the Academy Award for Best Feature, Best Film, but they expanded to documentary last year, and Free Solo won. So it did predict both Green Book and Free Solo last year.
I think it's been that award's accurately predicted every year except the La La Land Moonlight thing. Other than that, I think the last 5 or 6 years that award has accurately predicted the winner for Best Picture. So, and this year for the narrative is Jojo Rabbit. So it could, you never know. So Jojo Rabbit could also be the winner.
I mean, sometimes you have like the straight ahead prestige from like a Judy, which I saw, which I think will get Best Actress. I think the Phantom Oscar is in Renee's hand right now, but I don't think it's going to get any traction for Best Picture, perhaps. But Jojo Rabbit, if The Shape of Water, which was also a Fox Searchlight film, made it, honestly, I think JoJo has a shot, and I think this has catapulted it into that contention too. So it should be a great year to see what actually shakes out, and if some of the heavy hitters that are expected to go there too. But yeah, but we have great stuff, including like Apollo 11 as well. Another big thing we haven't mentioned, we're expanding to the Art Craft down in Franklin. It's a beautiful 95-year-old theater. And so we are showing that down in Franklin, which is going to be really crazy. And then like Indiana Jones Last Crusade as an anniversary film. Going Attractions, a love letter film, a documentary about movie palaces. We'll be showing that down there. Makes a lot of sense. So it'd be great too.
Very good. Okay. So, again, where can people go for all the locations and screenings and good stuff?
They can go to heartlandfilmfestival.org.
Excellent.
Yeah, and also, you can check us out on social media, Heartland Film, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for all the latest updates.
And swing by the office.
Swing by the office, too.
They're there. Yeah.
And students this year. Discounted ticket prices for students. So, no excuses.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to shift gears a little bit because that's what we do here at the film show is stuff I've watched recently because the pile is never ending. And also stuff that was missing to me. So starting things off is a film called Hypnosis to be Happy, and a Spanish film with a couple that at the beginning there is a it looks like a perfume commercial, basically a black and white film of these two wandering talking about art. And it goes through the several chapters. In fact, they label it as chapters of the relationship of these two people. This is a guy who, after four dates, proposes. And it's a little too soon for her. And we find out, no, both of them, especially in his case, of his history, what kind of upbringing he had, what is his haven, a kind of a warehouse slash bookstore is his safe place. There's actually a moment where they're out in the country and they literally hug a tree, and how when it looks like it's all on him, and then near the end when she says that I'm afraid of myself, and it barely clocks in at 70 minutes. It has that late 60s, early 70s kind of art house feel where it's just these two people in a camera, may or may not have been written, may or may not have been improvised. They're fascinating to watch, and the timing. I have a thing, Julia, called the grindhouse rule, that a lot more films would just be better if they were 70 minutes long.
I agree.
And this is one of those. I think if you'd added 30 more, people would be exhausted, even if it's not a screaming fest. So this worked out well. I was happy about that. Another one that's also out on video is called Miss Arizona, about a former Miss Arizona who's now a bored housewife. Cinematic jerk husband going on a business trip with a coworker companion, and she winds up doing a one-time teaching job at a women's shelter, and then some kind of major movie shenanigans happens, and so that's kind of loses it a little bit for me. For her, it's finding her voice and finding her presence even without her husband, even if it's with four women that have their own struggles, I guess I should say. When it's the four of them together, that's pretty fine. But when you have a character that has to go to pick up insulin, goes to a pharmacy, then goes to a person's house. And it just so happens that next door or living in the same block is a plot point. So other than that, it's fine. But go for the ladies. Maybe just take a grain of salt with the plot itself. Now, also from Mill Creek Entertainment, Greg, I know you are big on the Andy Sedaris filmographies from the 80s and 90s. One I had not seen before, but it was sent to me from 1991, called Do or Die. And it's about an international criminal mastermind who has the big organization, and he's tired of the federal agents getting in his way. So he's going to create a series of what he calls games of assassins going after two of the better known federal agents that have interfered in his business. Now, on paper, I gave you that. The international crime lord is played by Academy Award nominee Pat Morita. This is 7 years after The Karate Kid.
Oh, wow.
And and because it's an Andy Sedaris film, and Julia, look up Andy Sedaris when you get home. The federal agents are played by former Playboy playmates. This is a film that brags how many playmates and how many Mr. Fill-in-the-Blanks they can get into one single film. Mrs. Sosa uses the term made by boys for boys. This is the film. These are the films of Andy Sedaris. So big cars, big women, big guns, beer and pizza cinema, if you will. So anyway, that's out there. I also
coming soon to TCM. Yeah. Introduced by Julia Ricci.
I don't even know if this is going to be in the underground portion of TCM.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, that's out. So if you're an Andy Sedaris completist, it's on Blue. Oh, also Eric Estrada's in this. So obligatory.
Now I'm sold.
Former TV Muncie cop Eric Estrada, because he did that reality show where they had celebrity deputies in Muncie, Indiana. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, yep. Folks, these are your pledge dollars at work. That's what we do here. So, anyway, those are out on video.
That's the only thing they showed you, right, when you went to Ball State?
Yep. Yeah, that
TCOM classes?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know you. Oh, you're a Ball State University.
Yes.
Class of 93.
I'm sorry, I think Ohio State has that copyright.
Yeah. No, they do not. They do not. They tried. But
you'll get
no,
a civil suit against you.
Okay. I got your civil suit right here. So, you took a Wes Gehring class?
I did. Yes.
What did you watch?
Oh, gosh. Actually, we watched The Setup, actually.
Oh,
and that's
cool.
Where I first saw that movie. But a lot of Chaplin, a lot of...
Did you take his film genre class?
I took genres and World Film History 1 and 2, so I took the trifecta.
Okay, Welcome to the Wes Gehring gushing portion of this show. It was film genre, my senior year, my favorite class. I was not a TCOM major. I walked into his office, talked movies with him for half an hour, and he let me in the class.
Wow.
And it was one of the best things. Did you do it three or 2 days, two classes a week?
It was the genres, I think, was the three. So it was like the two and
you
then
discuss the genre on Monday, watch the example on Wednesday, discuss Friday.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember? So you said the setup.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What else do you remember?
Oh, we watched.
Come on, you're younger than me.
Oh, gosh, For genres, I know for musicals, we watched All That Jazz.
Good.
Rom-com, we watched Return to Me, which was an unexpected choice. I love that movie, by the way.
Return
to Me with
David Duchovny and
Minnie Driver.
Yes,
yeah.
The Heart. Literally,
yeah,
the heart is a...
Yeah, Bonnie Hunt directed it. It's a gem. Like, it really is.
Yeah, it is really good.
But yeah, I'm trying to think what else. We watched... the Woody Allen one with the where he's Humphrey Bogart.
Play It Again, Sam.
We watched that.
Okay, cool.
I can't remember what do you remember watching?
What I remember, we watched Patton for the war film, and of course the class was completely divided. Half thought he was a patriot, the other half thought he was a sadist. Let's see. I believe we did My Favorite Wife, the Bob Hope Claudette Colbert. That's right. He tried something different for us for a couple of films and actually back to back. He showed us Time After Time, which is really good. Malcolm McDowell as H.G. Wells, David Warner as Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, he showed us Fright Night because he wanted to do something beyond the top 10 of sci-fi, the top 10 of horror. Mm-hmm. And what he didn't realize was he picked two films that had disco scenes in them. Because in Time After Time, David Warner's Jack the Ripper, he takes the time machine, goes to 1979 San Francisco. There are discotheques there. And Fright Night, it's 1985, and there's the 80s versions of discos there. And I think, so of course we said, can we watch a film that doesn't have a disco sequence?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the restored print of the setup, the disco scene's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Ryan just kind of goes out there. Just leaves for one moment in the locker room scene and goes through the discotheque. So, Wes, we love you. You're a really, really good sport putting up with our nonsense.
Yeah.
I believe we watched High Noon for the Western.
Yeah, we watched that too, yeah.
Do you remember how your class responded?
I mean, the class.
You sang the song Leaving.
Oh, yeah, That, I think that was the part. I think we were all in agreement on that song being probably the most annoying thing after a while. But it was interesting. I think a lot of people were surprised by it. I think, like, a lot of young people, like, West kind of tend to avoid Westerns. And also, the gangster films, we watched Scarface, the original Scarface.
Thank you.
And, the best Scarface. Sorry, Al Pacino. So we watched that.
We're definitely not getting Irishman. Thanks, Julia.
Oops.
Hey, come on. Al had a non-screamy role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he did. But yeah, like we, yeah, that the people were surprised that the people, I think anything before like 1970, people my age kind of tend to freak out at. But then they
you're allowed to stay on
yeah,
the lawn.
Yeah, but yeah, so they, but they, but yeah, like the that was a surprising one to a lot of my classmates. They love Scarface and like you know like the shadows, and it's also a pre-code, and you know all yep. the pre-code elements where it's you know like sex, violence, all that. Like it was you know no holds barred before the production code came in. And
it's
so I think
it's universal.
Yeah.
For some people,
yeah, but yeah. So, and then I don't know for comedy we did too because we kind of watched a lot of depressing films. We were like, show us something. We're like, show us something
yes.
funny. And
yeah.
so we watched Some Like It Hot, which plays amazingly to college students. Everybody loved it. And then
right.
we also did Miracle at Morgan's Creek, which
oh, okay.
also people went. It was a riot. People went nuts. So it was crazy.
Do you remember the paper you had to write?
Oh, man. I wrote so many. I wrote one. The one I wrote in genres was on George Cukor and how he did a mix of rom-com and screwball comedy in
nice.
His films. So that was kind of, yeah, that was the one I think that, you know, I think he was surprised that I knew who George Cukor was. And so, yeah.
Well, I took it fall of 92. So Unforgiven had just come out, so I did one on the westerns of Clint Eastwood because mm. I lumped him into three categories, the spaghetti westerns. I wrote Is He Live or Is He Memorex, which was about Pale Rider and High Plains Drifter, where we don't know if they were actually people or figures. And then I Ain't Like That Anymore because it talked about Unforgiven and the outlaw Josie Wales of being something that you're not. And then, mm. and then there was like the miscellaneous stuff. So also the most fun paper I ever wrote.
Yeah.
I remember forcing my roommate to, as we were watching, within like the first 5 minutes of High Plains Drifter, and she says, they're not saying anything. And I said, it's a Western. Stop.
Yeah.
Be patient. So, and yeah. then what would you, then you took the two world classes?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So what filmmakers did you gravitate toward after taking that class?
Oh, gosh. I really liked Rules of the Game. Was it, Renoir?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I really liked those. That one actually, it was very, because I was watching Downton Abbey at the time, and it was it's Downton Abbey, but it's French, and it's there's all the character tropes and all that, so the inspiration was definitely there, so that was one I kind of gravitated toward. What else? We did a lot of the German Expressionism. Yeah, we watched Metropolis, and see, now I'm trying to
That's
remember. Right. Oh, yeah. And then a lot of the French New Wave, 400 Blows. I loved that film. And then some of the Italian neorealism as well. Like Bicycle Thieves, which is funny because the character's last name is the same as mine. So they're saying Richie, Richie
very
the whole
good.
Time.
And Julius steals bicycles around Fountain Square a
yes,
lot.
Yeah.
No, or the scooters because those are easier.
Yeah, that's that will be the modern remake.
The scooter taker.
The bird thief. Yeah, but yeah, those I love the French and Italian.
And Some Like It Hot. Going back is you program.
Oh yeah,
that
I also programmed Some Like It Hot. Yeah, so
very good.
Yeah,
it all makes sense now.
Yeah, but yeah, it's one that's one that I picked because it plays so like comedies. It's different watching a comedy at home by yourself than it is in a theater with other people, and especially a movie that you may have seen before. There's like Some Like It Hot. Watching it at home was different watching it with a group of people because, you know, you feed off the laughter and you pick up on different things.
Oh, yeah. And they laugh at different things.
People laugh at different things. And it's way more fun. I've seen Some Like It Hot twice on the big screen. And both times it was a blast because everybody just gets super into it. It's timeless. It was ahead of its time at the time. But, you know, it's still timeless. And, you know, it's really funny. And young people kind of gravitate towards how modern it is and how risque. You know, it was banned when it was released in certain cities and states. And you know, when you think about that, watching it now, it's like, this is tame.
You know what you say to those cities? Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And it's like Midnight Cowboy as well.
Yeah. Midnight Cowboy. That was another one we programmed. That was the first X-rated film to win Best Picture.
That's right. And it's tame by today's standards.
It's like rated
it's
R now. Yeah, now,
right.
yeah. PG. But yeah, so, you know, there's that one, and it's just interesting to see what, you know, like the reasons it was banned today. People would just be like, really? So it's...
Yeah.
It's
well, it's just the ratings. That's another discussion for another time.
Yeah.
Flawed at best. So, did you see the Downton Abbey movie?
Not yet.
I see.
That's not a bad time of year for us.
I understand that. Yeah. I don't know if you ran away for a couple hours.
I want to see it too. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I've heard great things about it, like about, you know, just people, if you're a fan of the show, and even if you're not, like, they, you can still jump in and enjoy it. So, yeah.
Speaking of stuff we haven't seen yet, I'm been fascinated with how many comparisons Joker has had to either Taxi Driver and or The King of Comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, part of it is a little bit of stunt casting because you have Robert De Niro as the talk show host. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this, and I have already talked to my director when I said I was exhausted by the superhero films, and this is not that. This is more of a downward spiral, I think, except it's not Paul Schrader, it's Todd Phillips. Mm-hmm. So it's funny you mentioned Downton Abbey, because now I'm in the segue. Henry IV Part 1, which is a part of Indie Bard Fest, is happening the 17th through the 27th. So, ladies and gentlemen, you have plenty of choices here in Indianapolis to see stuff. You have the Heartland Film Festival, where you can see a myriad of films. You have three Shakespeare plays and one inspired by Henry IV, The Tempest, done by youths, Hamlet, and Lear's Shadow. And my director, Glenn Dobbs, who's doing Henry IV, I'm playing Falstaff, made the comparison to Downton Abbey because that was the first play that had lords and ladies, and then we go to the tavern and hang out with the Tom Waits characters that are Falstaff and Prince Hal and others.
I can't believe we haven't, not to extend the conversation, but
that's all right.
Mr. Richmond over here. We're playing the Music Makers of Jeanette Records as well.
Very good. Look at you. Yeah, you know this.
It was because I think it was on the local PBS affiliate.
Yes, it
like
was.
Last December. It didn't get much play. And then obviously, love Richmond. I love
thank you.
A lot of music history of Indiana that no one knows about.
Yep. That's why there's the Walk of Fame. And we
hope
it's
really
people,
cool.
The Jeanette Foundation.
So, yeah, I mean, everybody from Louis Armstrong recording his first eyes with King Oliver to Hoagy Carmichael recording
Stardust.
My favorite song, Stardust.
That's right.
Recorded it the first time. It was a failure with no, it was just the instrumental version. And then I don't remember what the story was, but re-recorded it. And that's when it became the hit, the standard.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you make a song no one likes it, but he knows great, just record it again.
Well, it's been known to happen. Well, there's that that anecdote is done in the, of course, the PBS series Country Music that Ken Burns put out. I'm on episode 4, which is covering 1964 to 1968, but I believe going back to the 30s, Hank Williams, I believe it's Hank Williams. I'm sure I'll be wrong, and you'll send me a note saying so, but. Hank Williams told a musician, I wrote a song for you, and then Williams wound up recording it himself and getting it released first, and it became a hit.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, there's something to that certain degree.
That's a random thing.
Yeah.
I think just the difference with streaming now, now you can watch, like, anything, and it's like, oh, no big deal, you don't value it. But I remember the thing I never had, but now it's easy to get. I always wanted to save up at Best Buy growing up to get the Ken Burns Jazz. Eight to ten DVDs. I was like, oh, someday.
I know.
I'll be Mr. Moneybags, and I can afford this set.
And now you look to
now
Amazon.
Now I just scroll past it on Netflix.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm still like Burgess Meredith in the Twilight Zone. I have to own it, and then I will go deaf and my glasses will break. So I know as I mentioned last week, I am finally going to stop screaming to Criterion about releasing Local Hero because they finally did it, and now I'm going to scream to them to put out Tender Mercies. I don't know what it takes to get the rights to that, and you know, because it's, I believe it was Embassy put that out, so you know, find who owns that and get cracking on that.
Is the Burgess Meredith episode of Twilight Zone part of the, so Fathom's doing an event November 14th?
I think it is.
Okay.
I believe, because they showed images, because I believe Terror at 30,000 Feet, I believe that one, the one with the doctors, I believe those three are a part of it.
Big Nose Doctors.
Big Nose Doctors, yeah. So cool. But yeah, I believe those are happening. And kudos to everybody that made it to the Mystery Science Theater live performance on Thursday. I wish I could have gone, but, you know, work happens. So I remember getting home late from rehearsal and just watching The Day the Earth Froze. For all you Midwestern folks, enjoy that. All right, when the festival's over, what's the first film you're going to watch?
I don't know. It's a toss up. Either Downton Abbey, Judy, or The Joker. decide. One of
those. I don't know if you should do those in a row.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting triple feature.
Oh God. Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of going to Toronto, because you feel like you have so many. Like, I've knocked out so many films that I would have probably taken me weeks.
So you'll have some nights off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But honestly,
your family's relieved.
No, but I want to see The Irishman on the big screen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That.
And everything has been just fantastic about that. So.
Directed by Marvel hater Martin Scorsese.
Oh yeah. I was at the conversation at Tribeca. I'm also a short screener there, so I went fully enjoy the fest. Had a conversation with him and De Niro. Essentially, was just Scorsese talking, and De Niro kind of emoting.
Yes. I highly recommend if you listen to the commentary track to Meet the Parents, because it's Ben Stiller. Who directed that? And De Niro. De Niro says, I think, 5 words throughout the whole time. And literally, they would set him up and, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of
similar. I think the most I've seen him speak in some, well, besides currently CNN, but the Graham Norton one, where he's sharing the couch with Tom Hiddleston and then does the impression in front of him.
Yeah.
But just sitting there, and he encyclopedic knowledge and stuff, too, but he's talking about George O'Brien and... Mm-hmm. Sunrise and other stuff too. It was just pretty wild, the stuff that he just throws out there, and even little memories. He's like, you remember that time, Bob, that we went to that random person's house? The guy just kept asking us to go to his house, and we didn't. We finally went, and we were like on his bed, and he's
what?
He's like, yeah, I think I remember that. That was pretty wild too. But yeah, I think that's my So Irishman, and then but someday I would love that. That's my hope. Someday we get. Scorsese here, because he was the executive producer on our Grand Prize winner last year, The Elephant and the Butterfly, and the Dardenne brothers were on there too. So that was a powerhouse. So someday, Scorsese will be at Heartland.
Yep. keep me posted. So, all right. Actually, the other thing I wanted to recommend is, I can't remember how I discovered it. I probably have to thank/blame YouTube for being Orwellian, but there's a number of documentaries that were for the BBC. That were done by Rich Hall, former Saturday Night Live alum and not necessarily the news fame from HBO. But it talked about pop culture and how it reflected in American society, or in this case, I guess how the English view American society. There's one about the road picture that also tells parallels to the height of the automotive system and the highway system that we have today. So, you know, going all the way back from The Grapes of Wrath and The Wizard of Oz to Thelma and Louise and Paris, Texas, and, you know, everything that's considered that. There's one about the image of Native Americans in pop culture. There's one about the Deep South. There's one called it's called Countryer Than Thou. Now, it's not about film, but it's about specifically the history of the music impact of Nashville and Austin and how Nashville is, you know, kind of conservative old school boys way. And then, of course, Austin was the complete polar opposite when it came to diversity in music and in country music. And somebody had said, you take the church going, God fearing, beer drinking, people think who, you know, Smokey and the Bandit's the greatest movie ever made. And, you know, you have, that's Nashville. And then you go to Austin and it's, you know, pot smoking and hippies. And they think Up in Smoke is the greatest film ever made. You put those two together, you have Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
that, you know, brings bridges both of those two factions together. Okay. But anyway, if you get a chance, look for those. Those are on YouTube. But he talks in the road film, because I believe they were talking about Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore being a different road, a feminist road picture. But he does the thing, and I actually played it on last week's show, a section about how he's in a location, Rich Hall's in a location at a diner. And then the waitress comes up, asks him how the cheesecake is. And he's like, that's not particularly good, but maybe you should try something else. Well, maybe I don't want to try something else. Maybe what if this restaurant became great at cheesecake? It was only known for cheesecake. You don't buy anything else here but cheesecake. And then you make more cheesecake. And then you make a recipe before the cheesecake. What if you're handed eggs and cream cheese and graham crackers and here's your cheesecake? And then he goes, and I'm butchering this, but then he ends the rant with, and that's how George Lucas ruined cinema.
That's great.
So anyway, that is out there.
So, all the listeners, we're at the halfway point of the show. Yeah. So, hope you're excited.
Yeah, we're wrapping it. Well, we will wrap up with Dead People We Like because, as you know, we never had time for Dead People We Don't Like.
So, we mentioned Stardust. We mentioned Willie Nelson. So, this last week, I was able to have dinner with Jonathan Banks from Breaking Bad down at IU.
He's there. Yes, that's right. How was that?
He mentioned that he went to IU actually the same time as Kevin Kline and stuff, too. So, he has the IU ties. But we're talking about Stardust. Because one of my favorite pictures of him is on campus. He's with the Hoagy Carmichael statue outside the IU Cinema. So we just talked about that a little bit. But he's talking about how he likes Stardust, too. But Willie Nelson's version of it is one of his favorites.
It's pretty good.
So there's a little...
That's a man that can record all kinds of things.
Yeah. But he is amazing. And I think he loves IU. I think he said it was his grandfather actually laid a lot of the limestone for, like, near the sample gates, a lot of the buildings and stuff.
Oh.
So he has that. I think his mom was, like, on her own at 15. He's very generous in his conversation, the time he gives back, and his roles, too. And I think there's a video I share, too, that IU Cinema did on him. And what you see is what you get. I mean, he's
cool.
Full of passion and stuff, too. And he's a big Anthony Quinn fan, too.
We like that. Yeah. Do you remember the documentary A Great Day in Harlem?
I do not.
Okay. So this is my Stardust. So it's a famous photo of jazz musicians on the front stoop in Harlem in the 1950s. And if you go through the photo, it's actually on my desk, along with the glossary of all the people who were involved in it. Mm-hmm. Everybody from Thelonious Monk to Dizzy Gillespie, you know, runs the gamut. And this documentary came out in the 80s. And it was kind of a where are they now and people talking about the day and trying to get that organized. And two musicians were talking. And this one musician woke up in the middle of the night, had a song in his head, but he had a notepad right by his bedside, and he jotted it down. And he was very excited and went to bed, went back to sleep, feeling good about himself, woke up the next morning, was very excited that this was here, and he started to play it, and it was Stardust.
Oh.
Wow.
So it's all in the timing.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. We want to pay tribute to actress and singer Diane Carroll, who passed away earlier today at the time of this recording. Broke ground in 1968 as the first African-American female to star in a series. That would be Julia. Didn't play a domestic. She played a nurse who was a widow with her son. Went through the boyfriend / date of the week until she the series brought in Fred the Hammer Williamson, a.k.a. film sociology guest Fred the Hammer Williamson, as the great TV name Dick Bruce, who became her steady guy. And so that show ran for 3 years. Prior to that, she appeared in the film of Carmen Jones, as well as the film version of Porgy and Bess from 1959. Again, famously, Paris Blues from 1961. Not famous, but Hurry Sundown from 1967, a Southern fried melodrama directed by Otto Preminger, starring a Southern accented Michael Caine. Jane Fonda, Burgess Meredith is in this. Faye Dunaway and Otto Preminger. Well, they didn't get along, and then again, Faye doesn't get along with that many people anyway. But no, this was one of those. Southern fried melodrama trashy film. You know, this is after Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and before Mandingo. So it's of that ilk. And there's I actually own it because it's part of a Otto Preminger collection that had Skidoo. You've seen that?
I've seen, like, is it the opening credits, I think?
Oh, my.
Both of you,
come to Richmond and watch it with me. It's...
In the Lions game, right? Back to back.
Yeah, basically. Hurry Sundown is trashy bad. Then she appeared in the Split, and of course in 1974 received an Academy Award nomination for her work in Claudine, opposite James Earl Jones, where we wish all maids look like Diane Carroll and all garbage men look like 70s James Earl Jones. Of course, Dominique Devereaux on the Colbys, then Dynasty, because it's television, and it was huge back then. Also, other credits include The Five Heartbeats. And the last thing I remember seeing her in, and she worked for 20 years after that, was Eve's Bayou. So, but yeah, quite the career. So find some of that. And yeah, get some pizza and beer and watch Hurry Sundown if you must. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Thanks for hanging out with me, guys. Have a great festival.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go to Heartland. They're waiting for you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!